I'm here with Heather Ripley, who's the Director of Public Relations and Development for Homeward Bound of the Grand Valley, which provides a safe shelter and resources for homeless adults and families on their pathway home. We're here at the shelter in Grand Junction, and she's going to give me a tour. Thanks for meeting with me today.
Thank you so much, Ellie. It's a pleasure to have you here. I am going to start actually over by the doorway so we can give you kind of a full view of what we have here. Okay. So where you walked in from the parking lot, that's the area where we start our intake process. And that starts at 5 o'clock for families, 6 o'clock for individuals. So this whole parking lot that you see will be packed with people come 5 p.m. in the evening. After they go through the intake process, they fill out a little bit of paperwork. They go out here on the smoke deck. We read them all of the rules that they need to abide by for the evening. After they acknowledge the rules, they come into the shelter, upon which if they need clothing for the evening, we have... as you can see, all of these 13-gallon plastic garbage bags all filled with donations. So this closet is completely filled with everything from, sweatshirts, sweaters, pants. We also have in that big, huge blue coat or tote over there that has coats on top of it, there are also shoes. It's completely filled with shoes, coats. We also will provide them with socks and undergarments if they need those sort of items.
You say they come at 5. Mm-hmm. Are they not allowed to stay here all day?
Yeah. So this is an emergency shelter. Emergency shelters are typically designed for people to go on appointments during the day. And an appointment can be anything from getting mental health services, to say EBT, food stamps, to unemployment services, pretty much the whole gamut of services to get people back on their feet.
And transportation as well to various locations?
Through the Grand Valley Peace and Justice, they usually will help people to get bus passes so that they have a way of getting around in the valley. I know there are also services that are provided to provide folks that are mobile with a bicycle. So this is our family site over here. This whole row of bunk beds right here is for our vets. So the reason why we allow them on the family site is because we feel that the vets have provided an invaluable service to us. And so we want to get them in a place that's a little bit more quiet when we... When I show you the dorm for men and women, it's a lot bigger and it can be a lot noisier. There are evenings that we have over 180 to 200 people staying here. So on those nights, for people that have certain conditions like post-traumatic stress and other mental health that are, due to some of the things that they've experienced in combat, we want to make sure that they're provided with a safe, more quiet environment.
It seems like it might be noisy with the kids, though.
This is going to be the quietest environment that you would have around here. It's probably also the nicest area of the shelter as well. As you can see, it's not much, but it's still a little bit something. We have a couch set up with books, video games, a TV. This whole area is primarily for our family. And so our families that stay here, we really try and provide them, again, just like we do for our other individuals that stay here, we try and provide them with clothing. There's a storage unit completely filled with kids' clothing. We only take in-season donations, so because we have such limited space, as you can see. And you're looking at lockers right here. All of these lockers are for the family. So, you have 3 people per family fitting into 1 locker, and, that can get really full.
Just to describe for our listeners what this room is like, it's bunk beds, one right after another. How many are in here, would you say? There are toys on top of all the lockers, and I would say the room is fairly sparse in terms of like stuff. There's just not a whole, and it's all consolidated and piled up near the lockers. There's a, I see a little bassinet over there. Do you have babies?
Yes. We have quite a few, I think maybe two or three right now. As it gets colder in the winter months, I mean, this place is completely filled with people. Underneath the beds, you can't see it over here, but you'll see it more on our single side. We will have so many people in here that there will be beds, mattresses on the floor, and people just sleeping on an actual mattress, not on a bed. So that's why it's kind of sparse, and we really limit what can be in here, because we want to make sure that we're able to accommodate all individuals and we're not turning anyone away.
What happens when you have someone in here that is disruptive or maybe just going through a really hard time and making it, you know, hard for other people to get sleep?
We have certain rules that individuals have to abide by. If they are not following those rules, we will give them a warning. But if they continue to be disruptive, you know, their lights out is at 10:30 every night. And if people aren't abiding by those rules, they do get a warning, and they realize that, you know, after a warning, you will receive a consequence for that. Unfortunately, in a homeless shelter, your consequence are going to be nights out of the shelter. You know, a lot of people come here and they don't have a structure that maybe you or I would have experienced growing up. So we do need to enforce structure and rules and things like that. But we also have to do it in a way that we're not being so harsh that people just don't want to stay here or be here. That's not the purpose, mm-hmm. you know, of the shelter. So
thinking about having, like you're saying, like up to, you know, 80 people in a room mm-hmm. with different families coming mm-hmm. from hardship. It, mm-hmm. Yeah, it must be, I mean, it's hard to live with anyone, but mm-hmm. in a situation like that, it must be.
It can be difficult at times, but also it can really be an amazing sense of community. Around Halloween, I had picked up a bunch of pumpkins that were donated by a local farm, and I brought those in, and all of the kids kind of came together and were super excited. And, you know, we had chaperones and people to help out with the event. So the parents kind of got a night off and could just relax or just have fun and have that family moment. And for the kids, it was just a moment of normalcy. They didn't feel like they were in a shelter that night. They were just able to be kids. So it's kind of cool when we're able to see things like that, where it's not just all kinds of chaos, people fighting with each other, but it's actually being able to communicate and have a good conversation with each other.
Mm-hmm. There are 414 homeless households in Mesa County, according to data from a study that was done in 2013. So that may have changed quite a bit,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. We're working on our stats for 2016 to 17, but for 2015 to 16, we housed in at Homeward Bound alone 1,358 individuals.
Different people.
Yes. And 23% of those were homeless vets. And I believe we housed over 108 families within that year.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the veterans that come through here, because more than 120,000 homeless veterans are in the U.S., mm-hmm. According to a recent study. Mm-hmm. And in addition to the shelter that you provide here, there's another affordable housing option for veterans as mm-hmm. well, right? That's called the Phoenix Project.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about that?
So the Phoenix Project is a transitional housing project that we do. So what happens is individuals that stay here get 90 nights. And so within the 90 nights, you know, we do breathalyze. That's one of the requirements to stay here. One of the requirements to stay at the Phoenix House is that you have to remain sober, and you have to have 90 days of continuous sobriety before you're allowed into the Phoenix Project. But that said, individuals that stay here for 90 days automatically would have that 90-day time frame, which is a great thing. People that actually stay here also do things that you would do at home, such as chores. So that earns them additional nights, not just chores, but good behavior and helping out and volunteering and all of this stuff. So they can, you know, add in or pad it with additional nights. So they would have that sobriety requirement. And then the Phoenix program is a 2-year program. And then what happens is within that 2-year program, they are given case management. They do certain classes to help them to learn how to budget. A lot of people come here not knowing how to budget. That's not the primary reason for it, but, you know, it truly is a transitional living program to provide them with the day-to-day skills that they need and to set them up for success when they leave here.
Why do you think there are so many veterans that are in this situation? I mean, you would hope that after you serve your country in that way that there would be job opportunities and help for people coming back with PTSD and, mm-hmm. you know, other issues that might make it harder for them to get back to life here as a mm-hmm. civilian.
Mm-hmm. Well, the biggest issue that we see is mental health along with addiction, also known as co-occurring or dual diagnosis. So a lot of times when people come back from whatever combat that they've seen or just from serving, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder, if left untreated, there can be other mental health issues at hand. And when people don't seek treatment for that because, you know, stigma associated or attached with that, or just, you know, not wanting that help for whatever reasons, a lot of times they end up, I guess, treating that condition with alcohol and drugs. And so when you have that substance abuse factor in with the mental health, a lot of times, you know, poor choices are made. And, you know, diseases like any other illness, if left untreated, you know, unfortunately, with that sort of an illness, it leads to homelessness is what we usually see. So, and that can be, we see that with our vets. We're seeing that even more so with individuals who haven't served, you know, pain pills leading to other, you know, street drugs. So I think addiction and mental illness in general is going to be one of your leading causes for homelessness.
Are there times when somebody comes here and, you know, because they're not passing breathalyzers or anything, that they might, what they need instead of a night in a homeless shelter is actually treatment and, you know, rehab? Or...
Mm-hmm. When that is the case, a lot of times those individuals, we try and get them referrals to treatment centers, things like that. I know that from my understanding, Mesa County, you know, we do need more treatment centers here. I know a lot of people get passed off to Mine Springs for treatment. So from my understanding, a lot of times there aren't enough beds or there are just not enough services available for something like that. So, but we will always do what we can do to put that person in touch with the services that he or she may need.
And if you're just joining us, I'm here with Heather Ripley, who's the Director of Public Relations and Development for Homeward Bound, which is a homeless shelter that also provides resources in other ways for homeless adults, families, and veterans here in Grand Junction. So, Heather, I'm wondering how you got involved in this line of work and what you feel is important about it and why you do it.
The reason why I work at Homeward Bound is I recently moved to Grand Junction over this summer. I'm originally from Omaha, Nebraska, and I've done a lot of volunteer work in the past. The cause has always been near and dear to my heart. I have a background in sales and marketing and wanted to take those skill sets and bring them to a cause in which I can, you know, focus on fundraising and event planning and, you know, all of that stuff for a noble cause. On a personal level, the reason why I'm so dedicated to homelessness is I have a family member who is homeless, who has suffered and struggled with drug and alcohol addiction for at least 20 years. And it's devastating and it's heartbreaking, but at least I'm in a position where I'm able to help those that suffer with the same problems. So,
and speaking of volunteers, and you started out that way, mm-hmm. What does a volunteer do here?
Probably one of our most dedicated volunteers is, I thought he worked in the kitchen. Even when I first started working here and volunteering here, I always just assumed he was part of the staff here. In fact, it turns out that he's a volunteer in our kitchen. And so our volunteers can do anything from helping out cooking in the kitchen. We need people that come in, that can fold clothes, sort clothes, that are good at organizing things. We had an amazing individual who was just staying at the shelter who said, I want to give back. And how can I give back? And this room was in complete and total chaos. I mean, clothes all over the floor, just like tables that were filled with totes of mismatched shoes and all kinds of things. And, you know, because of our volunteers, you know, this room is clean. So opportunities from, you know, cleaning toilets to cooking in the kitchen to, we have volunteers that tutor here. We have volunteers that help me with holiday events. I know that right now we have a program called Turkey Bucks. It's through Safeway. We've had some wonderful volunteers get involved in helping to raise funds for the holidays that way. So it's a little bit of everything. You know, we're a nonprofit, so we're definitely on a shoestring budget here. So our volunteers are a crucial part of this place being run. I think the biggest, most sought-after volunteer position here is serving dinner. Some people will cook and serve. If you're not a seasoned cook, cooking for 150 to 200 people can be quite intimidating. So we do offer the opportunity to sponsor a meal, which is just $25. With it being the holiday season, the volunteer schedule for serving a meal has, I mean, we have just a few dates open at this point. But yeah, serving is one of the hugest opportunities we have here.
And so tell us a little bit about Thanksgiving, because it's right around the corner. Mm-hmm. What are the plans for the shelter?
So every year for Thanksgiving, we have been blessed by the Elks Club and Salvation Army. And so what they do is they have a bus that runs here. And they come, and there are three different schedule times in which they do a pickup. They run people from Homeward Bound over to the Elks Club, and they have a full spread for them. And they have people that are so dedicated to cooking and providing our homeless with a meal. That will provide them with lunch for the day. Afterwards, they come back, and we already have, through our Turkey Bucks program, we have this amazing spread that we have for dinner every year. And so that is pretty much set up to where we don't really have to cook anymore for it. It's just provided to us. So
so you guys get a night off.
Yeah.
Shall we continue the tour a little bit? All right.
So I'm going to open up this closet so you
can see.
You know, and this has all been folded, but every night somebody is going through looking for something for their little one. And so we can never have enough volunteers come in and help us to organize things. We're so limited on space that our shed that we have outside, we are constantly having to go through it and reorganize it. because people are so generous. They want to give when it gets cold outside and things just kind of stack up. So
how many kids are here now?
It can be anywhere between 5 to 11. It can be up to 13. It just kind of depends. A lot of people, because they're only allowed 90 nights here, so some people, if it's a little bit warmer, they might go somewhere else for the night. And then when it's really, really cold, they will wind up here.
Do you think that a lot of people that come in here for the first time are feeling really, I mean, it must be hard to come to a homeless shelter?
Any of our residential coordinators also act as kind of guides to this place, so they can even pull somebody, any of our staff members, aside and just have a conversation with them. Mm-hmm. We try and give everybody, you know,
equal
amount of time, and, you know, provide them with, you know, a genuine look in the eye and a handshake. Some people that are here do not want to be here, and it's really tough for them to be here, especially around the holidays. So we try and be as understanding as we possibly can be, and respectful to people's needs. So what you're looking at right now, just kind of segueing into the room we're in, this is our singles area. And so these are all single men that stay here. Mm-hmm. This is what they call our tote room. So as you can see, we have this big, huge blue cart filled up, and that's filled up with clean laundry. And St. Mary's is kind enough to provide us with laundry services for all of our linens. So individuals staying here have clean sheets, you know, and that's a clean blanket. Everything from, we do provide showers here, so everybody staying here gets a hot shower, a hot meal at night, and a hot meal in the morning, so dinner and breakfast. And when I say dinner, we have some churches that cater, and the meals that we get in here are not, you know, what you would think from, like, just like gruel or slop. I mean, it's almost like a three-course meal. You get a lot of times they get dessert. I mean, they provide them with really quality meals. We also will provide them back here in our tote room with everything from shampoo to, you know, any hygiene product you need, to even razors, lotion, you name it. It's all donated to us. Toilet paper is a hot commodity, so that is all housed back here. So they have to ask for toilet paper, because otherwise, unfortunately, that does go missing. And we want to make sure that, you know, everybody has that necessity when they're staying here. We do have a commercial kitchen. We actually have some people with a lot of culinary skills back there. So we do provide residents staying here with training. It's our culinary skills program. So,
oh, how cool.
Yeah.
And right now we're making banana cookies.
Oh, that sounds good too.
Just because we had bananas that needed to be bananaed up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is, I'm just reading this. This is kind of nice.
Oh, that's our saying for the week or day or whatever. We always put up something.
Well, I'm going to read it just for our listeners. You were given mercy, show mercy. You were given compassion, show compassion. You were given a chance, give a chance. You were forgiven, show forgiveness. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about how people get here. You did mention that a lot of times it's drug and alcohol addiction, self-medication issues that come about because of mental illness that's untreated. I hear people talk about culture of poverty, which sort of indicates that it's like a concept that there's a cycle of poverty, despite help and maybe even despite anti-poverty programs that are out there to get them on their feet and get them into working and living in a home and doing all that.
So homelessness isn't, there's not just one thing that causes it. It's not the cycle of poverty, I mean, certainly doesn't do anyone any favors, you know, especially when we look at minorities. We know that, you know, they tend to be a little bit more on the lower end of income earners. So the one thing that I would suggest for a lot of people that aren't familiar with homelessness, we did an educational night with the local college, CMU, and we did a sleep out for homeless. And the documentary that we watched was called On the Streets, and it was put together by the LA Times. So you can actually go on YouTube or go directly to the LA Times and live stream it there. And it documents the different types of homelessness. Poverty is actually a separate issue from homelessness. The things that we see that cause homelessness, the biggest thing really that people don't like to talk about is the fact that minimum wage is not enough to sustain, you know, a person, a single person alone, unfortunately. Half of the men that live here actually do work. So it's not a one-size-fits-all. It's not a 10-year plan that can solve it. It's a lot bigger than that. You know, the thing that I really like that the documentary showed, and I think that it was really eye-opening to even some of us that work here. I mean, you have college students that are working on their master's or their PhD, and they're homeless. And sometimes the question is, do I want to live in my car and have my car to provide me with the transportation I need to get to and from, or do I want to live without a car and have a home? And for people that are earning minimum wage, it's not enough to sustain them. It's not enough to provide them with an affordable apartment. It's not enough, you know, for an apartment, food, you know, and with your basic essentials, gas, water, electricity, all of that stuff. So we do see people that are coming in that are working and are homeless. We also see people that are working and they're just, you know, with so many of us, we're just one paycheck away. And that is what we see from a lot of single people. We even see that with families that are, you know, making the decision, do I want to put my kids in daycare or do I just want to have, you know, the single parent working? Or some people, it's insurance. And the fact that I've talked to people who have had cancer and due to some of the treatments and, you know, losing a job because of the cancer treatments, missing so much work and losing their home and not having anywhere to go. That's what we really see. We see women who are in their 50s who have really not had a ton of work history because they were a stay-at-home wife and their husband, you know, files for a divorce. And then what do? You know, a lot of them end up homeless, not by choice, but, you know, as a result of, you know, a life change. We have people that we see older people that are homeless that, you know, didn't plan on being parents again because the kids have addiction issues and they're not planning for more than a fixed income. And the cost and the prices of housing going up and keeping up with more mouths to feed, we've unfortunately have seen that as well. So while we think that, yeah, it's poverty, it's poor choices. Yeah, poor choices, perhaps. Maybe, you know, poverty can be a contributing fact. Poverty and living maybe in less desirable neighborhoods where there's gang activity due to the gang activity or due to the choices that you have in that cycle, if you will, be it drug, alcohol, gang related, or whatever violence that they choose, people end up committing crimes. And when we're looking at felonies versus a misdemeanor, you know, those felonies follow you in life. Felonies, you know, really impact the people that stay here. Mm-hmm. Because there are a lot of people who can't find jobs, the jobs that they can find are minimum wage jobs. So it's that whole, okay, I've paid my debt to society, but now I can't find anybody that wants to rent to me because I'm a convicted felon. Or it could be going back to the minimum wage as a result of being a convicted felon. So it's a terrible cycle.
Okay. And last, I just wanted to talk about Pathways Village.
Mm-hmm. Pathways is an amazing program. And that's a program that is developed primarily for our families. It is a state-of-the-art housing development not only is it a transitional, it's a permanent living arrangement. So the individuals that are accepted into the Pathways program will work with our life skills coordinator. They have certain requirements that they have to meet. They have to be working as one of them. But what they do is they adjust, you know, their rent to their income so that they always will have a place to live. And so it's a really amazing program that, you know, that we've gotten the funding to build such an amazing program. There isn't a cap to when you can stay there. Once you're in, you're in. So
is it hard to get in?
It can be. But like I said, if you're working with our life skills coordinator, they really work on getting you into a program like Pathways or transitional living situation like that.
Can you tell our listeners where they can go to donate, to sign up to volunteer, to be a part of this organization in some way?
So you can go to our website, which is homewardboundgv, so gv like grandvalley.org. We have donate buttons on there. There's a link at the top of the page for that says volunteer opportunities. You can fill that out if you'd like to volunteer here. We'd love to have you here to volunteer, or if you just want to donate, even something as basic as $10.02. $10.02 will buy one bed night for an individual.
All right. Well, thank you so much for meeting with me today. I've been speaking with Heather Ripley, who is the Director of Public Relations and Development for Homeward Bound of the Grand Valley, which provides safe shelter and resources for homeless adults and families on their pathway home. Thank you.
Thank you so much.